Thanks, Richard, for addressing us today. James Mabayat from the Pharmacy Guild. There's a couple of things that I do agree with you about, and I think I should state them what they are. Obviously, sharing of wealth is something that I agree with, and fair society is also something that I agree with. The issues that you've raised about low wages, collective agreement, lockout, annual leave, and AWAs, and termination of employment as well, there were issues that actually we've known about in the past. And in fact, regarding the annual leave, I think you could have bought out all of the 4 weeks under the old legislation, where under the new legislation you can only buy up to a maximum of 2 weeks. So I think that that is a positive in the right step. There's also the increase in the sick leave and carers leave up to 10 days, which used to be under a lot of industry awards up to 8 days, so that's another positive. In terms of collective agreement, I still think that under the new Act you can enter into a collective agreement, so I do question what you were saying about that. I think a lot of employers will continue to use collective agreement under the new legislation. I know some of my members will. Low wages, we'll talk about that. Recently, the New South Wales Industrial Relations Commission and the Western Australia Industrial Relations Commission issued a $20 pay rise for low-paid employees. So I think they've set the scene in terms of the Fair Pay Commission of what they're going to have to consider when making their decision in spring. So I don't know. I think you've concentrated quite a bit about what you thought is the negative aspects, and I don't think you sort of mentioned any of the positive aspects.
You're right. I don't really know where to take it beyond that. Look, to try and sort of rattle them off quickly, I don't think there is... I think it is really beyond question that the minimum standards are being reduced. Yes, you can point to a couple of the instances that you have, but you know the allowable award matters are being shrunk really effectively down to 5 conditions. In terms of and yes, you were able to trade things out previously, but the test that was applied was benchmarked against the minimum, and if the minimum shifts, then that's obviously going to have an effect on what trading is done. So, I mean, that's the point there. In terms of collective agreements, well, I hope you're right. I mean, yes, you can clearly still do collective agreements under the Act, and I hope you're right that employers continue to use them. But my point is that what collective agreements... what any agreement actually is meant to do is sign people up to the terms of it, both parties, and this just doesn't. It doesn't sign the employer up to abiding by the terms of that agreement for the workforce that is covered by that agreement for the duration of that agreement. The employer now can do all that, but then he's at liberty to change that with any individual that they want to. And the provision, you know, it's quite technical at a level, but the provision which allows for AWAs to be offered during the life of a collective agreement is the single most important and damaging, in our view, reform in this whole package. That will, in our view, or at least potentially, opens the door to AWAs being, you know, offered at will. Now, I hope you're right in your assessment about that, but from a legal point of view, there's just no doubt that what that does is make attempt to make AWAs the cornerstone of the system. I think the final point you meant was the decision of the state tribunals, which we obviously welcome. Of course, they were state tribunals under state Labor governments. I think I'm going to get this stat right. Since 1996, if the federal government's submissions that it had made to the national wage case had been awarded by the Federal Industrial Relations Commission, the minimum wage would now be $44 a week less than what it currently is, which is a significant, it's more than 10% less than what it is, which at that level is a huge amount. Again, you have to ask, what was the motive for removing the old national wage case process and putting in place the Fair Pay Commission, which is undoubtedly a less independent body and more closely aligned to the government? And I think the overwhelming Well, I think the only motive you can take from that is to try and get a closer alignment between what the government's stated objective in terms of minimum wages is and the actual outcome. Now, if that's right, then you will see a reduction in the minimum wage, and that's not going to dramatically happen tomorrow or even this spring. But 5-10 years from now, we will look at the way in which the Fair Pay Commission has operated, and we will see that real wages have reduced. I don't think there's any doubt about that. That's why the Fair Pay Commission's been constructed in the way that it has. Leave it at that.
Yeah, no, Richard, tremendous answer to a detailed question, so I think that's worthy of applause in its own right, but you don't get the... now, the next question doesn't have to be as detailed as James's, so if anyone would like to take themselves to a microphone, their opportunity. Thank you.
Richard Dale Seymour, thank you for a stimulating address.
Thanks.
Maintain the rage.
Try.
And that's the theme of the question. How are you going to maintain the rage through 07 and beyond? What are the challenges for reforming the industrial wing of the Labor Party and the union movement in order to make you the capable alternative government?
That is a good question. In fact, that is probably the question. I think our campaign in relation to these laws has gone about as well as we could have hoped to this point in time. We have clearly raised the issue of industrial relations, and it's more than industrial relations, it's really workplace rights. And I make the distinction because back in the 70s, industrial relations probably was a hot topic, but then it was more about kind of managing union activity, and it was the kind of mandate of consensus that Hawke came to power on in 1983, which is a bit different to how the issue is being argued now, where it's really about workplace rights. In some ways, I don't think workplace rights has ever been an election-determining issue. And I think that was part of John Howard's analysis when he did these reforms. I think we in the last 18 months, I guess, have successfully raised this issue of workplace rights up to one which people, if there were an election today, would be voting upon and would certainly be voting in a way which would put the government in trouble. So that's all good. But in a sense, your question is exactly the question, which is we are now, probably 16 months away from the next federal election, which is a very, very long time in politics. And I think from the government's point of view, they would be hoping that the rage isn't maintained and that this is kind of swept through the system, and by the time we come to October, November 07, that people will have forgotten all about this. And I think that is a real challenge for us. I don't take it for granted at all that we will be able to maintain the rage. I think the answer is going to... I think from the government's point of view, I mean, the honest answer, I think, from the government's point of view is that they are very alive to this dynamic. I think the message that they have given to large companies in this country has been to, we've got the laws now, don't jump on them straight away and let's get through the next election. There's a definite sense that that message is rippling out there. And so I don't think we are seeing the worst of the the atrocities that could be seen under these laws right now, but I think we... that's a fair enough word. That's not rhetoric. Come on. Anyway, I think that we will see those after the next election rather than before. I think that would be their game plan. And in a sense, that then provides the answer for us. We have got to be doing everything... this week has been good. The kinds of events that we've seen, the big rally on Wednesday, and we have another plan for November, they are very important. But of themselves, they're not going to see us through to the election with the result that we want. I actually think what will maintain the rage and what will keep this at prominent levels in people's minds are the individual stories, and we have got to be doing everything we possibly can to tell every one of those stories, the meatworks at Cow and Spotlight and Spotless and so forth, whenever they happen, so that people see the real human effects of these laws. And in a sense, I think over the next 18 months, the battle will be joined on that ground. In the midst of the question, you asked another question, which is just as big, which is how do we reform the industrial movement or the industrial wing of the Labor Party, and perhaps the Labor Party itself. I actually think that from the union's point of view, these laws are placing a certain discipline in thinking upon us. The ability to be indulgent about running or having sort of meaningless dispute, not meaningless disputes, but say disputes about coverage or disputes which aren't absolutely critical. But what I'm trying to say is the room for indulgent industrial behaviour now is zero. And I think that that this environment is going to place a discipline on that kind of behaviour that nothing within our movement would ever have been able to do before. And I hope very much that what that means is that in the next couple of years that the union movement will become, not that it isn't serious, it's obviously deadly serious at the moment, but that you will see examples of that behaviour reduced significantly. And I think the much more significant ethos, which in my view has been the guiding ethos of the union movement really since Federation, which is the kind of issues I was talking about before, promoting cooperation in the workplace, promoting industrial harmony, that's actually been the character of the Australian union movement far more than the industrial action that people have seen at other times. I think that will become absolutely predominant. So at least I hope that's how it plays out.
Terrifically thoughtful answer, Richard. Thank you, and thank you for the question, Dale. We have another question over here.
Trevor Lloyd from Prescox Lawyers. Richard, thank you for your address. I thought I'd take you from the process issues that have been the focus of the discussion so far to the outcomes. The example I'd like to draw on is the building industry in Victoria. Do you have any views on what you think the impact of these reforms is going to be on the delivery of building outcomes for Victoria? What's going to happen to the building industry here?
I think the government has high hopes for what these reforms are going to do to the building industry in Victoria. And I don't think that it is going to achieve what they would hope it achieves. I also think that, the building industry is a tough industry. It is on both sides. There has been, I'm not about to be one who denies issues there, but I also think that there is an undue focus on unions in the context of issues within the building industry. And indeed, the Royal Commission into the building and construction industry, which was a phenomenal, there was a phenomenal amount of money spent on that, ultimately came up with barely any recommendations for prosecutions. I doubt whether the ratio to money spent to prosecutions had has ever been so great as in that case. And what they did find along the way was a whole lot of bad practices on the part of employers as well. Well, our sort of beef, though, and I've heard this from various Conservative politicians who, I had the job of trying to lobby last year to prevent these laws going through. Obviously, I was a stunning success in doing that. People were saying to me, look, this is really everyone's copying it for what the building industry is doing. If that's right, that's really an appalling way to go about in doing public policy in this country, that what you do is pick a particular industry and then on the basis of them legislate for everyone. And I think to an extent that's happening. And I actually don't think it goes to the core of the issues within that industry, which are much bigger than, what these particular laws will do. And I don't think you can... at the end of the day, you cannot legislate against people working together and against people banding together. And people are still going to do that in the construction industry, and well, they should. So I don't think that's the kind of path that this government is trying to go down in order to change the building industry. In fact, what needs to happen is, it seems to me that both parties have to be brought together and we need to be working along a much more cooperative path in order to gain results there.
Thanks, Richard, and thanks, Trevor, for the question. And the last question we'll take from the back of the room, and we've got a couple of minutes in answer for that. Richard, if that helps.
Thanks, Richard. Ian Stewart from Resolve FM. I wonder, to what degree do you think this is a correction that may well have had to happen? we get not only the Howard waking up with the majority in the Senate, but we also get the whole thing softened by an economic boom and a shortage of labour. But that's not going to continue, and there'll be a correction in the future. and to the degree there's going to be a correction in the future, perhaps mitigates, you know, the sort of things you've been talking about these laws and, you know, how they've been introduced and the intent of them.
Oh, yep. I think I hope that analysis is right. I mean, I hope that there is a correction in the future, and maybe there will be, and we can look back with the benefit of hindsight and what you've just said and say that it was a perfect prediction of the way things ultimately pan out. I guess the point I make, though, is I don't think this government is legislating at the moment with a... I think you make a valid point. I do think they are legislating with the current state of the economy in mind, and I do think that they are very much hoping that the buoyancy of the economy at the moment will soften the effects of this so that they are able to get it through without too much pain being felt. I think that analysis is right. But having said that, I actually think a lot of pain is already being felt, and I don't think the government is going to get away with it. But I think they are kind of using the economy at present as a shield. And it also raises this issue that the true effects of this are going to be really felt when the economy is not going as well as it is at the moment. But I don't think this government is legislating with the idea in mind that, oh, well, look, if it all turns out badly, somebody down the track can modify it. It would need, and this perhaps is the point to end on, it would need to be a very big correction. That's the other thing to say. The whole analysis of correction implies that what you want at the end of the day is a system which is somewhere in the middle. In the context of our own history and in the context of the Western world, these laws are nowhere near the middle. I mean, you might have kind of Japan and Western Europe over here. You might have North America over here, north of the Mason-Dixon line. You kind of have Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina over here. Well, our laws are right over there. I mean, that's the truth of it. They are far worse in terms of what they provide for working people than the laws that apply in Alabama, Mississippi, and South Carolina. So the correction that needs to happen is going to have to be very significant.